Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh.
CougarCast,
covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board.
Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast.
All right, what is up? My name is Keith Schertz, and I am not with Tosh again today. He is he's busy. He will be back next week. It doesn't matter. We got crappy games coming up. Carrying on with the theme of the football team, BYU brings in Mount St. Mary's and Colorado Mesa this week in the College Basketball Experience Hall of Fame Classic. Oh, and it is going to be a classic. You are going to look back even in 3 weeks and remember and recall anything that happens from the Mount St. Mary's or Colorado Mesa game. I'll be amazed. But anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. We got an up-and-coming, emerging team. A lot of excitement around this team because the Cougars begin the season very well. They open up with an 81-72 win in the Marriott Center against Weber State. And they also, of course, pulled off the big win at Maples Pavilion over Stanford. They won in a wild game, 112-103. Two 9-point victories from the Cougars. But there's a few things that we know about this team already. We're going to be able to score. This is a team that doesn't lack the ability to score. And, you know, defensively, there's a whole lot to see still. I'm not sure where we're at, but boy, things are starting to look really positive. I guess where I'll start on this is, you know, this year before the season, I had 12 games circled as games that BYU could potentially lose. Now, you know, you always know that one of those other games might go away. Like last year, we lost at home to San Francisco. But this year, anyway, there's 12 games that I call danger games, right? 12 games that they got to worry about. They're past one of them, and they got to win against Stanford. The next one is coming up in a week from today, which is Wednesday. So November 20th, they're playing Iowa State at home. The building should be rocking for this exciting BYU team. That's their next big challenge. And, of course, they actually have three in a row, potentially. Actually, four in a row, potentially. Really kind of tough games, and it'll be interesting to see where they come out of this. You know, they'll be 4-0 after this coming weekend, and then you know, Iowa State at home. They're playing in the second half of the College Basketball Experience Hall of Fame Classic against Texas, and then with a potential game against Wichita State. But even DePaul is a tough game. But I hope we get to see us play Wichita State. That's a Final Four team from last year. The Shockers, it's an awesome program. And also, then the following game after that, potential matchup with Wichita State or DePaul, they got Utah State. So those four games, they'll be interesting. I would be amazed. I mean, if they get through that stretch of four games in a row, and we're at 8-0 going in to play North Texas at home, watch out. Watch out. This could be a really, really special year. I don't know if that'll happen. I kind of have more of a sense that I think... anyway. I think by that point, that it's more likely they'll be like 7-1, maybe 6-2. But let's talk... a lot of talk about the new NCAA rules with the hand check, the charge block rules. You know, scoring is up. If you watch any NCAA game, scoring is up everywhere. But the thing is, a lot of people are complaining about it. They're complaining that nothing happens, that there's always just the whistles blowing. But as a BYU fan, you should love the new NCAA rules. You should be obsessed with them. These new rules, they really help BYU. Especially when you have three guys out there. You know, a lot of fans are trying to craft them as a run TMC, which, of course, has already been taken by Tim Hardaway and Mitch Richmond and my brain, Chris Mullen. But anyway, you don't want to give a nickname to a team that's based on a nickname that was given to a prior team that only went 81 and 83, right? I mean, they made it out of the first round of the playoffs once, and it was a short-lived little run there for the Golden State Warriors when they were run TMC. Well, anyway, a lot of BYU fans are trying to make this team call them run TMC as well, because you got Tyler Hawes, right, Matt Carlino, and Collinsworth. Anyway, to be a big mistake. But with those three guys, with Tyler Hawes, with Carlino, with, you know, Kyle Collinsworth, it is really helpful to have these new NCAA rules, especially when these guys are attacking the basket. It's so important that happens for BYU, and I love the fact that we're attacking the basket. We're not shooting as many threes as we used to. The amount of three-point shots that we're taking has actually decreased, and that's a good thing. I think that as they attack the basket more and as they look to be more transition-based, that is really, really going to be a gigantic benefit to this team. They are going to get to the line more. Now, we're going to have to adjust and figure out how to defend without, you know, trying to get in a hole the way that we kind of did against Stanford. I feel like we gave up a lot of free points to Stanford, and we didn't do a whole lot to stop Stanford, of course. They scored 103 points. They had fantastic players on their team. But I think that we did do a nice job of, as one Stanford, like Randall, he would get going for Stanford. And as he'd be playing well, BYU would make an adjustment. They'd begin to try to take away some of the stuff that Randall was doing. And then what that would do, though, of course, is as we are busy taking away Randall, you know, the big thing that kind of resulted from that is then the big man there for Stanford, he can't remember his name. It doesn't matter. The big guy for Stanford, then he would get going. Powell, right? Dwight Powell. He'd get going. And then, you know, Hustis would get going. And they'd kind of take turns. And they never really got it going as a team, like, at the same time. And BYU could kind of key in on the guy that they were looking for at the time. And I think that that's what helped them. The other big positive is BYU would be up, you know, double digits pretty much the whole time. And it was that way against Weber State as well. And I think that what happened was down the stretch of these games, I don't know if they weren't closing out as hard as they should have or whatever, but teams then, you know, our opponents were kind of coming back. Like Stanford hit like several threes down the stretch of that game while BYU was just trying to take the air out of the ball and finish up. So it's kind of an incredible beginning of the season. I thought that they played well in both games, and of course, you know, anyone that worried out loud about Tyler Hawes and him having problems this season, they got to feel silly at this point. I did think he wouldn't score as many points, and I thought that was just part of, you know, the new system of playing man-to-man defense, that he won't be as available and free. But boy, that guy is still looking for his shot. He is putting up tons of shots, and he was already a savant when it came to getting to the line last year with last year's NCAA rules. Now that he has even more advantages, you know, you can't touch the guy. And if you do, it's a foul. He's developed some really nice stuff, too, over the season. He's developed a nice move where he lowers his shoulder into the chest of the guy and then does a quick step back and then shoots, and he's pretty deadly with that. The one that I was debating with Kevin Schaefer, he's one of the writers at Vanquish the Foe. I was debating with him on Twitter about Tyler Hawes. He made the statement that he felt that Tyler Hawes's ability to catch the ball and shoot. So as soon as he touches the ball and he shoots, it went in. I think I remember him doing that like six times, and I think he made four of those. Anyway, it was just a really awesome start to the year. Tyler Hawes has 29 points per game average at this point, and he's actually averaging the most rebounds on this team, 10.5 rebounds a game for Mr. Hawes. So he's almost a 30 points and 10 rebound guy a night. Now, both of those are going to come down a little bit. But I've been making this argument from before the season began. If you've listened to all the episodes of our show, you'll know that I said to Tosh that Tyler Haws is better at what he does on the basketball floor than any other athlete on campus is at what they do. He's the most talented at playing basketball. Yep. I think that that's absolutely true, and I think he's the most dynamic and interesting to watch play. You know, he doesn't have the flash like Jimmer. Like, he's not going to shoot like 40-foot threes, and there's not going to be moments like holy cow moments. But, you know, he's going to work the mid-range, and honestly, you know, the comparison with Ainge that he received from Seth Greenberg during the show, the comparison that he's received and earned to be put in the name of the greatest basketball player in the history of the school, I think it's well-earned. I think if you were to make your all-time starting five for BYU at this point, it's really hard to leave Tyler Haws out. Like, I think Devin Durant and Michael Smith should be getting nervous, right? One of them is going to see the bench. He's fantastic. Tyler Haws is an incredible player, and I think he should be the king of, like, the campus right now. He should be the most popular player around campus. Anyway, it's really exciting to see that this team can kind of come along and improve, and that they have different things. And so what I want to do is things to kind of keep your eyes peeled for. So we'll do that right now.
Keep your eyes peeled. Keep your eyes peeled. Keep your eyes peeled.
Okay, enough of that. All right. So here's my five things you got to keep your eyes peeled for over the next few weeks. One of the things that we had seen, but I wanted to just point it out to you as something that is sort of kind of an amazing part of this team. Carlino went out with two fouls early against Stanford. Do you remember that happening? Yeah, maybe it just happened on Monday, but it was really an incredible thing to see how well the team just responded without Carlino in the game. It was amazing. They put Kyle Collinsworth at point guard, and the team moved on without any problem. And frankly, that's when the lead was kind of broken open and BYU, you know, got up by 10 and stayed up by 10. Collinsworth at the point works. It's dynamic, and it's a problem for the other team. Do you realize how good Kyle Collinsworth has been so far this year? He's averaging 12.5 points per game, 8.5 rebounds, and 7.5 assists per game. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous what this guy's doing out there. He adds such a huge dimension to this team. And to have a second guy that's really comfortable, you know, being a floor general on the floor and kind of taking care of everything that you need out there, it's just huge. It's just so big. Last year when Carlino got in trouble, who did we look to? Well, okay, we'll throw Craig Cusick out there, right? Maybe we'll try Zylstra. Ugh. Having Collinsworth back is so, so important. It's just vital. He's a great player. And it's exciting to see what he's been able to do. And I think that that's the biggest bit, is that he has been able to really facilitate a lot of what's gone on this year. I just think that he's done a great job. You know, he has more assists than anybody else on this team. And he has 5 turnovers, right? And so it's about 3-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. That's not bad. Carlino at this point's 1-to-1. He's got 9 assists and he's got 9 turnovers. Yeah. So I don't know what you want to take about that, but overall they're doing a pretty good job protecting the ball and not turning the ball over. They had 9 turnovers the entire game against Stanford. And then when they were forcing turnovers, they were scoring really quick off of it. And that was ultimately, you know, the difference in the game was the attack mode in transition and how vital and just vicious BYU was when they caused a turnover. I mean, they came down to the other end of the court and just attacked. And it was great. And they have to do that. So keep your eyes peeled for Collinsworth as he takes over on the point. There's a chance that this is the better place for him to be on the floor, and one of them may take over kind of like a six-man role. I kind of like the idea of maybe when you sit Carlino, you know, move Collinsworth over, but have Collinsworth always be on. I don't see – he's just – the versatility that he provides is just huge for this team, and we'll see more of his growth as time goes by, but – do you wonder what other West Coast Conference coaches must be thinking when year after year they're like, whoa, this guy's on the team. Where did he come from? Like, it's like, where's BYU finding these guys just out of nowhere, you know? I just think that last year with the appearance of Haas and this year with the appearance of Collinsworth, it's just it's just got to be mind-numbing to some of these West Coast Conference coaches. They must be wondering, where in the heck do you find these guys? Okay, the second thing that I would look for is, again, the continued progression of Eric Mika's post moves. So I don't know how many he's had at this point, but he's had several catches in the post. He's a really pretty useful scorer in the post if he moves quickly. He's actually not one of the guys – like. There's guys that need to be really patient when they have the ball in the post. That's not Eric Mika. Eric Mika does awesome, and he's been more effective when he's been quick. And here's why. It's because he's only done the same move. And I've already mentioned this, but we've only seen two post moves out of Eric Mika, and I've only seen the second post move once. Every other time, it's always been a dribble or two dribbles. And then he spins over his left shoulder and does like a little hook push shot. And it's an effective shot. It works for him. And that's what, you know, Trent Plaisted made a living out of doing that with his left hand going over his right. But I just think, you know, Eric Mika's got to show more than that. He had another one where he did a spin move like all the way around on the right hand side and then squared up and did a jump shot, like a traditional jump shot, and that he scored off that as well. But I was already seeing that Stanford was cheating. As soon as he caught it on the post, the guards and stuff were all looking for a bounce because he always takes a bounce. Always. So that's something to watch out for, and he's gotta, you know, progress with that. I have faith that Coach Pope, of course, is recognized the same thing that I've recognized. They're going to work together on that, and he's going to just get better. But how exciting and fun is it to watch this kid play? I mean, he's been awesome. He's just been a really good addition to this team. As a true freshman, he has really shown really well for himself. Okay, the third thing to...
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled for is, I think BYU, they need to start figuring out how to put teams away. They haven't really sealed the deal yet, and they've allowed it to be a little bit more stressful than it's needed to be. Weber State's not a bad team. Stanford is not a bad team. Both of them are pretty good teams. And so I don't expect to win by like 30 points. But there was never really a time where it felt like, gosh, they really had the killer instinct. They put this game away, and it's over. They'll get up by 15, and then they'll kind of stay there. And what I'd like to see BYU develop is once they get to 15, now I know that you've gone on a run to get to that point, but then find another gear and go on another 10-0 run. Right, or 10-2 run, and now suddenly you're up 20 something. Once you get in that range, I mean, it's pretty darn hard to come back from that. And so I'd like to see BYU develop a killer instinct and begin to put away teams. Okay, fourth thing to watch for. I think Jabari Parker is incredible, and it makes me sick watching him play at Duke. I know that, you know, ultimately I think he made the right choice. But it just, you puke, you want to puke a little bit, just think about him playing the four for this team. You get him out there, you have Carlino, and you have Haas, and you have Collinsworth, and then you put out Jabari with Mika. Ooh. Oh. Wow. I mean, that's a really, really lethal thing. And just watching Jabari and what he's doing already in his first two games at Duke, I mean, he's the best player on the floor. Ugh, just makes me sick. Makes me sick. I mean, that guy would have been the king of Utah County and all of Mormondom. I'm glad he's doing well, but I've now made a moratorium. I can't watch SportsCenter. I don't want to see Duke's number one doing his thing out there. A shout out to him for doing so well, but oh, it makes me sick. I don't know. Maybe we didn't actually really have a shot at him. I don't know. But the bottom line is gosh. Instead, we saved a scholarship spot for him, and instead we had to fill it with Skylar Halford. So let that sink in. Okay, and then the fifth thing is some crazy news today. Peyton Dastrup last Thursday committed to Ohio State University. Today he decommits from Ohio State, saying that he never felt comfortable with the decision, that it didn't sit right with him. And as today is National Letter of Intent Day, he ended up decommitting from Ohio State and committing to BYU, and this is official. The letter of intent is in Dave Rowe's hands. So BYU lands yet another top 100 prospect for this class. So TJ Haas is coming in. They'll have Dalton Nixon is coming in. Toulson is coming in. Ryan Andrus is coming in. And now Peyton Dastrup is a for sure thing. He's coming to BYU. And that's a good thing. I never commented on anything at any point when he decommitted or when he committed to Ohio State University. I felt bad about it. I wasn't surprised by that. It's what I predicted. I'm really surprised that he decommitted and decided to come to the Y. But if it's what's right for him, then welcome to the family, my man. And I'll tell you what, you take a look at everything that BYU has coming. Dave Rose has done an incredible job with setting the stage for his team. And he mostly just looks to get just the best players he can. But you know, I mentioned the five kids that I just mentioned. You have Andrus, Toulson, TJ Haas, who has been even more dynamic in high school than Tyler was, which, I mean, it's crazy. And now you got Dastrup and Dalton Nixon. So you have those five kids coming. But a lot of times we start to go, okay, well, there's Nick Emery, right? We got Nick Emery, and that was good. Jacob Hartsock, right? They're saying he's a more athletic Noah. If he's anything like Noah, wow, this is going to be really fun. And then Jordan Chapman is coming as well. And I'm sure I'm missing a couple other kids. You know, you add that in with Mika's going to be around for a while, and we got Worthington. He looks promising. Wow. I mean, we've got a team. And this is the whole reason I said for the longest time that you ought to be a bigger BYU basketball fan than you are a BYU football fan. Because you understand, right? There's a lot of people that cheer for football who've never played football, right? There's a lot of people – and – everyone's played basketball, so you understand kind of the skill that you're watching. It's a, you know, it's faster. The game gets done quicker. There's so many things about the game. It's easier to take your girlfriend, your wife to. It's easier for them to stomach. The other bit is though is that we have a chance to play it out. You know, I know the new playoff rules with college football are in, but we don't know, you know, what BYU's standing is and all of that. We haven't really gotten it so far. If you're independent, it only matters if you're Notre Dame, and they'll give you particulars about where you fit in there. But they haven't given us any particulars about how we fit in. So it may be possible BYU goes undefeated and is left out. Right? I'd be surprised, but that's in the cards potentially. So this basketball team is always going to get a chance to compete and play it out on the floor. And that's nice. I love the chance that we have to get that done. The other argument I've always made is, for football, you got to find around 20 players that are really good. You can have a couple kind of holes, if that makes sense. And I know that they've done it in the past. They won in 1984, and they got it together, and they figured it out. But you've got to find around – I'm going to have to say, like, yeah, I mean, you've got to find 10, 12 really elite players, really good high-level players, NFL-caliber guys, to win a national championship in football. To win in basketball, you only got to get three or two of them, right? But like, if you have three of some of the best guys – and by the way, we might have that. We might have that right now with Haas, Collinsworth, and Carlino. A lot of schools that would trade us for those guys. And I just think that you got to have three, and then you got to have a couple really good role players and get that together. And then you get a chance to play it out. And I think when you've got dynamic options on your team, when – you've got a guy that's sublime who seems to have no kryptonite, like Tyler Haas. And then you have a couple other kids that we'll have to wait and see more out of Collinsworth. We know what Carlino is. By the way, Carlino, I if you listen to Bill Simmons or you read Bill Simmons, he has a theory out there about – he uses it for Oklahoma City for Russell Westbrook. He uses it for the Detroit Pistons, Josh Smith. He calls it the 90-10 theory, and what it is I think it applies to Carlino as well. But 90% of what these players do is fantastic. It's fabulous. They're really good. There's the 10% that they do that's not so good, and it just happens that with these three guys, including Carlino, there is an element to the way that they play that will drive you a little bit crazy. Just that the 10% that's bad about them is really noticeable. But the 90% that's good, you know, is really good. And so you take the 90 and you live with the 10 and figure out your best ways to hide it. So what is Matt Carlino's 10%? We know what the 90 is, right? It's driving to the basket. It's finding his way to the free throw line. It's attacking. It's sort of the slash and kick it out. When he's doing slash and kick stuff, when he's attacking the rim, when he's going hard like that, he's a great player. He could change any team in the country by being on it when he plays that style of ball. The 10% for Carlino is mostly in two things. I think that we've seen enough from Matt Carlino at this point. When it comes to outside. He does a nice job. He hit a few mid-range shots, and he does a nice job with that. But the three-point shot for him is just not – it's not a shot. He wants it to be. It's not. He takes a crazy amount of three-pointers. He's a 33% shooter in his career. He's 2-for-8 this year. He's taken the most threes of anybody on this team. Okay? Why is he shooting so many threes? The next most threes taken on a team is 5 by Tyler Haas. And Tyler Haas has hit 3 of them. Anson Winder, he's 3-of-5 from 3. Okay? For heaven's sakes, Nate Austin's taken 2 threes. He shouldn't, but he made one of them. You know, he's only 1 three-pointer made away from being as many, you know, scoring as many as Carlino. Carlino needs to settle down with the three-point shot. He's on pace to take the more threes than anybody that has ever played at BYU ever. He just can't be doing this. And I just think that the biggest thing is I just think that he ought to – I don't know – I know that you want to give your players confidence, and Coach Rose is a big believer in confidence and trying to make sure that he instills as much confidence as he can into his players. And I think that's a terrific thing. But as things stand, you know, Carlino's, I've just pulled it up. Through 61 games played, Carlino has shot 291 threes and made 97 of them. It's 33%. Okay, if you look at the top 20 on the list, okay, he's 12th all time right now. But he's going to crush this. He's going to find his way up this list. But the bottom line is that he needs to settle down on the amount of threes that he's shooting. Okay, only Shane Knight, who is 20th on the list, the very last guy in three-point attempts, only Shane Knight had a worse shooting percentage than him. Everybody else's is higher. Everybody. Okay, Brock Zylstra, better three-point shooter than him. You know, so Mikkeli Wesley, power forward, okay, better three-point shooter than Carlino. It's just, it's ridiculous for him to be shooting this much, and he needs to kind of settle it down. So that to me is part of his 10%. It's that he shoots way too many threes. He's going to finish his career, if not number one, he'll be up there in the top three for most three-pointers attempted in a career. And unless he gets a little bit of discipline and does what he does good and kind of hides the stuff he doesn't do so well. I just, we've seen enough threes out of him to know that he's a 33% three-point shooter. That's too low. That's not accurate enough. The other component of his 10% is that he plays hero ball. There's just moments where he does things that he shouldn't do. You know, it's one thing when Jimmer Fredette fires a 40-foot three. You know, he's hitting 40% of his threes. When Matt Carlino jacks up a 35-footer, it's a ridiculous thing for him to do. And there's no reason for him to be doing this. He hasn't proved that that's a shot he can even do. I know that he got really hot against San Francisco on the road 2 years ago. But anyway, yeah, I just think that there's that. But he plays a little bit of hero ball. What I mean by hero ball is he wants to be the guy who's making the big shot. He wants to be the big momentum-changing shoot guy. You know who else played a little bit of hero ball? Tavernari. Tavernari's a 90-10 guy. Exactly the same. And I just think the biggest problem is that they got to pick their spots. They got to decide when they ought to shoot. And that's the biggest thing is he's got to be more – I guess shot selection is my biggest problem. The 10% with Carlino is shot selection. And not only just taking them, period, but scenarios in which he's taking them. You saw a moment during the Stanford game. There became a moment where Carlino was going to become the guy. He came in and he drove and drove and drove, and he was really successful in that period. But he used like 7 or 8 possessions in a row. I mean, he didn't look at anybody else that entire time. Fortunately, he was just driving to the basket on almost all of them. There was one where he took a three and he missed it. But otherwise, he was either getting to the line or getting close to the basket and getting layups. And, you know, he's a real crafty player when he's within 10 feet. He's great. And so just appreciate the 90. Try to ignore the 10. And it's really hard to ignore the 10 when you feel like he's taking a three-pointer in the wrong spot at the wrong time of the game. But that's the sort of stuff that he does. And it's just part of what you have to live with. It's just part of having Matt Carlino as your starting point guard. He's a 90-10 guy. So it's an interesting way to kind of take a look at this team, but you know, I think that this team has a real chance to go on quite a roll. You know, I a lot of their key games are in kind of either neutral spots or they're at home. I kind of like what this team has going forward, and I really am happy with the effort that, of course, is coming across. The future looks good. Right now looks good. I mean, it's a great time to be a BYU fan. Okay, and to preview, just shortly, you know, Mount St. Mary's and what you ought to do when you watch Mount St. Mary's and what is it, Colorado Mesa? Okay, what you ought to do when you watch this game is you really ought to try to figure out, get two of your friends together and make a bet with each other. And do this is the game. Do a points, rebounds, and assist game. Assists worth two. All right. And whoever accumulates the most. So just however many points plus rebounds, and then take assists times it by two. And then each of you pick who you want. And then have a milkshake on it or something. Right. But do it. And then so everyone has to pick somebody. And of course, try not to fight each other for Haas. Because, again, like I said, I mean, he's just, we're really watching something special right now. He is easily one of the 10 best players to ever play at BYU at this point. Already. I haven't seen the last 2 years of his career. I don't care. I've seen enough. He's a top 10 player. It's exciting. It's so exciting. I'm in love with this BYU basketball team. I think it'll be fun to watch the development of the young guys. There's enough, you know, experience from the front court that, you know, bringing along these young guys, there'll be a little bit of growing pains, but it will be much less noticeable because you're going to be getting so much from the new big three. It's just awesome. It's an awesome time to cheer for BYU. And I welcome Peyton Dastrup to the team. I believe that he will be a really useful player to the team, but there's a lot of talent coming in, and getting minutes is going to be tough. These guys all better be working hard out there, not just you know, to bring people into Christ on their mission, but also on their jump shot. If they want to play a little bit, they better be working on it right now in the mission field on P-Day. So anyway, thank you again for listening to the show. I know that it was just me and not as fun, not as fun. Always better to have Tosh with me. He'll be back next week. And we're going to break down the big games coming up next week. The big Iowa State game, and then getting ready for, you know, Texas and maybe Wichita State. Exciting times. Go Cougars. And again, make your bets. Do it with your friends. It's a lot of fun. All right. Take care.